Canto 3, chapter 29, text number 18. Our verse for this morning. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Adhyatmikanushravanan Nama Sankirtanachchame Arjavenarya Sanghena Nirahang Kriyaya Tata Adhyatmikanushravanan Namasankirtanachchame Arjavenarya Sanghena Nirahang Kriyaya Tata Adhyatmika Spiritual matters. Anushravanat. From hearing. Nama Sankirtanat. From chanting the holy name. Cha. And. May. My. Arjavena. With straightforward behavior. Arya Sanghena, with association of saintly persons. Nirahang Kriyaya, without false ego. Tata, thus. Translation, devotee should always try to hear about spiritual matters and should always utilize his time in chanting the holy name of the Lord. His behavior should always be straightforward and simple. And although he is not envious but friendly to everyone, he should avoid company of persons who are not spiritually advanced. Purport. In order to advance in spiritual understanding, one has to hear from authentic sources about spiritual knowledge. One can understand the reality of spiritual life by following strict regulative principles and by controlling the senses. To have control, it is necessary that one be nonviolent and truthful, refrain from stealing, abstain from sex life, and possess only that which is absolutely necessary for keeping the body and soul together. One should not eat more than necessary. He should not collect more paraphernalia than necessary. He should not talk unnecessarily with common men, and he should not follow the rules and regulations without purpose. He should follow the rules and regulations so that he may actually make it. Paragraph. There are 18 qualifications mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, among which is simplicity. One should be without pride, semicolon. One should not demand unnecessary respect from others. And one should be nonviolent. Amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsa. One should be very tolerant and simple. One should accept the spiritual master. And one should control the senses. These are mentioned here. And in Bhagavad Gita as well. One should hear from authentic sources how to advance in spiritual life. Such instruction should be taken from the Acharya, and should be assimilated. Paragraph. It is especially mentioned here, Nama Sankirtanach Cha. One should chant the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Either individually or with others. Lord Chaitanya has given special stress to chanting of these holy names of the Lord as the basic principle of spiritual advancement. Another word used here is arjavena, meaning without diplomacy, quote unquote. A devotee should not make plans out of self-interest. Of course, preachers sometimes have to make some plan to execute the mission of the Lord under proper guidance, but regarding personal self-interest, a devotee should always be without diplomacy. And he should avoid the company of persons who are not advancing in spiritual life. Another word is arya. It's in the verse. Aryans are persons who are advancing in knowledge of Krishna consciousness as well as in material prosperity. The difference between the Aryans and the non-Aryans, the Sura and the Asura, is in the standards of spiritual advancement. Association with persons who are not spiritually advanced is forbidden. Lord Chaitanya advised, Asat Sangatyaga. One should avoid persons who are attached to the temporary. Asat is one who is too much materially attached, who is not a devotee of the Lord, and is too attached to women and enjoyable material things. Such a person, according to Vaishnava philosophy, is a persona non grata. That's Latin. An unwelcome person. Final paragraph. A devotee should not be proud of his acquisitions. The symptoms of a devotee are meekness and humility. Although spiritually very advanced, he will remain meek and humble, as Kaviraj Goswami and all the other Vaishnavas have taught us by personal example. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that one should be humbler than the grass on the street and more tolerant than the tree. One should not be proud or falsely puffed up. In this way, one will surely advance in spiritual life. Quite a list, huh? Makes you want to either get inspired or check out, one or the other. But this chapter 29 is 28 and 29 both are describing devotional service. You know, the chapter title for 28 is Kapila's instructions on devotional service, and this is explanation of devotional service. Devotional service is essential. Just an important point to note. While, just like yesterday evening, the verse that was being discussed was from chapter 2, verse 25. We discussed a little bit 26. That's in the Sankhya Yoga section of Bhagavad Gita, one of the three Sankhya Yoga sections. And I mentioned, Kapila is the propounder, like, of course, he's an expansion of Krishna. Krishna is the propounder. But he focused on Sankhya Yoga. He's known for, you know, the propounder of Sankhya Yoga. He gave Sankhya Yoga to Devahuti. We discussed this in these earlier section, but Sankhya, analysis of matter and spirit, where does it lead to? It leads to devotional service. And there's stages that are described in the previous chapters. And one is proper identification of self in the category of spirit. It was yesterday, Krishna's verse in Bhagavad Gita, that one who properly, clearly identifies himself with spirit, for that person there's no more lamentation, no hankering and no lamenting, no aspiration for things of this world, and no lamentation when things of this world, which are all temporary, are no longer around, because it's just going to be like that. It's the nature of this world. So identifying with it, knowledge leads to detachment, just a byproduct. And without attachment, then lamentation disappears, and greed and lust and the six enemies of a living entity, just by proper identification of self. And then sequentially, Kapila Dev describes the analysis, detailed analysis of matter, identifying oneself with spirit, and then the spirit meditating upon the Supreme Spirit or Paramatma, fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord. And it doesn't stop there. It's not just a knowledge process. It's not just a meditation process. Fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord with a pure spiritual conception successively, under proper guidance at least, then leads to the desire to be engaged in service to the Supreme Lord. So that's what's being described in these chapters. Service to the Supreme Lord. There's what brings about the mood of service to the Supreme Lord, which is association of saintly persons. And in the association, just know the state, through association of saintly persons, you do those things that saintly persons do in the association of saintly persons. Bhajana Kriya. And through the process of Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti. And through the process of Anartha Nivritti, steadiness, Nishtha. And it's progressively bringing one closer and closer to attachment, not just awareness of and acceptance of the existence of the Supreme, but attachment to the Supreme. And with attachment to the Supreme, ecstatic jubilation. Bhadrinarayan Swami was telling me this little Prabhupada story yesterday at breakfast. He was a bhakta in Los Angeles temple when they had recently acquired or purchased the present temple. Previously there was some rented property, and then they purchased the present property. Now the present property was Watseka Boulevard. Present property, where the temple room is now, wasn't the temple room then. The temple room then was where they have the theater. I don't know if any of you have been to L.A. temple and seen the Fate Museum. In any case, the arrangement that Prabhupada was doing after they had just opened the temple was he was training them in the Ishopanishad mantras. So Bhadrinarayan Maharaj was describing at the appropriate time, because Prabhupada was very come in the morning after they had their deity greeting, and It was just small Radha Krishna, not Rukmini Dwarkadish that are there now. And Prabhupada would, after darshan of the deities, would come and sit on Abhyasasan. And when he sat, the devotees would pay obeisances. And every morning, they got through verse 12. Prabhupada, while they're still paying obeisances, would begin reciting, you know, the invocation mantra, and as soon as they were finished paying obeisances, they would respond. And so that was the procedure every morning. But one morning, after paying obeisances, they didn't hear Prabhupada's voice. And so they looked up, and Bhadi Narayan Maharaj, Bhakta, saw tears streaming down Prabhupada's face. Ecstatic symptoms. In relation to his devotees, he was instructing them in Ishvapanishad. Internally, he was on another platform altogether. And generally, he didn't exhibit that, but sometimes he exhibited that. So Bhadi Narayan Maharaj was, you know, a new devotee, didn't know any of the nectar devotion symptoms of ecstasy, but could, you know, 2 plus 2 was really easy. And he visibly saw, in his words, Bhadi Narayan Maharaj, Prabhupada pushed that emotion down. And, you know, some deep breaths, and went on like it didn't happen. And then later, back in, after class was over and back in his room, Karandar was the president at the time, asked Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, what should we do when we see you, our spiritual master, experiencing these ecstatic symptoms? And the report from Karandar was Prabhupada was like a little boy who was like caught with his hand in the cookie jar, saying, well, I don't normally do this. This is Raga Bhakti. And when one, from our acharyas, we see from our founder acharya's example, I mean, I was present when something like that happened. I was in Mayapur with, you know, several hundred devotees in the room, right in the middle of a Bhagavatam class. It was a Chaitanya Charitamrita class in the morning. Prabhupada just lost external consciousness and went into a trance right on the Vyasasan. The teaching is execution of regulative activities externally. Internally, not disclosing those emotions or, you know, the contemplations that awaken those emotions. But this is exactly what Rupa Goswami teaches. That so this is giving us the externals, this section. The regulations that help bring one and qualify one to the spontaneous stage. And it's a nice list. One may go, oh, the list, it's too high. But the teaching, Bhagavatam's teaching, is it's not too high. It's on our own endeavor. These qualifications, where are you going to find these qualifications? So it's not just cultivate qualities, cherry-pick qualities. Here's a low-hanging one, I'll work on this one. Rather, it's within, there's purification that comes from hearing and chanting, the basic activities, hearing and chanting. Specifically mentioned, this chanting of the holy name. and the glories of the Supreme Lord. If you were not yet, or if you weren't present or have not yet been able to see the recording of Vaisheshika Prabhu's class that he gave on Wednesday morning, it's recorded and it's online and brilliant. On the topic of the great significance of the holy name, for that was, you know, many different ways in which that was expressed. And then following that, the role of Srimad Bhagavatam and the role of the mission of giving the name and giving the scriptural message, just as what's going on here, what's the qualities that should guide the life of a devotee. I'll just repeat something that Prabhupada would often say, and I've often repeated it. Spiritual life is best progressing on two tracks, just like a train. Modern trains are monorails, but on two tracks. One track is that which purifies, and the other track is that which purifies without proper guidance. It can become sentimentalism and fanaticism. And on the other side, guidance, without a heart that's pure, it remains theoretical. So both are needed. And this is the Bhagavatam giving us both. It's giving us the significance of the hearing and chanting process and the qualities that one should live by. The guiding signals or indicators or qualifications. And there's this which comes first, the chicken or the egg question. You know, do qualities come first and then bhakti becomes awakened, or does bhakti come first and then the qualities become awakened? Well, it's a false dilemma because, you know, one enhances the other. Driving, essentially our teaching is driving the whole thing, is the chanting of the holy name. That's that shelter makes the heart pure. And then coming, so the desire to please Krishna, that's the horse, pulls the cart. The cart is the qualifications, the qualities of a devotee. But one can chant without qualities also. There are lots of people that chant, not devotees and non-devotees that chant. Just last night met one young man, father, and his wife and little daughter were there. And he was describing in a little conversation after that from when he was little, he heard Hare Krishna, but he didn't have, no one explained what it meant. So just, and even the way that it was spoken in the house, he didn't know what they were saying exactly, but he heard it again and again. And after some time, some explanation, oh, that's what it means. Within this section of Bhagavatam, even that kind of chanting, abhas, like Ajamila, not intending to call Narayana, calling his son. So, Namabhas is very powerful, what to speak of Shuddha Nam, that the careful avoiding of offenses so that one can enter into that realm of Shuddha Nam. Most important. Most important. The activities of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, most important. There's an outcome that with that ardent hearing or bringing the message within, just as I was just reading some of the previous verses, that's what's intended. The hearing and chanting is then grananti. You bring it within. It becomes the way that you live your life. But just hearing these qualities helps contemplating the qualities along with the hearing and chanting activities helps make these qualities our qualities. It's an arrangement that Krishna has. How to make a Kali Yuga person a qualified person. Not easy. In case you haven't noticed. Both ourselves or extending to others. It as Srila Prabhupada described when he reached the Boston Harbor. Maybe some of you are aware that in the ISKCON 50 celebration, it happened already, Prabhupada's departure from the Jaladuta, on the Jaladuta from the Calcutta Harbor. Big 3-day festival, fantastic event. And now as Prabhupada traveled from Jaladuta, there were two places that he stopped, Cochin and some other place. And then, it's September something or other, third weekend of September, they're celebrating Prabhupada's arrival in Boston Harbor. Big festival. And when he arrived in the Boston Harbor, he wrote a very beautiful prayer or poem to Krishna. And part of that prayer or poem to Krishna was, yikes. How are these people going to understand this message I've come to bring? It's a message of pure goodness. And these are persons just, see the culture. Ignorance and passion are overabundant. How is the audience going to understand? And then he gave the answer by quoting Srimad Bhagavatam verses that just by the process of hearing, Srinvatasvakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantaksto Yabhadrani Vidunoti Saritsatam Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu, etc. Those nice verses. That the purification takes place just by the hearing and chanting. Even if they don't have affinity for hearing and chanting, just by hearing. Today people are, their attention is so distracted. So distracted. So many studies have been done for education about the attention span of young people because they're used to, digital information age things. The attention span is so short. So it's very challenging for educators. Nonetheless, education must go on, and spiritual education must go on. And the conviction of our founder Acharya was that just by giving others an opportunity to hear, the purification will take place. Even the distracted kind of hearing, purification will take place slower than attentive. And when that attentiveness comes, these are qualities. And so these are guidelines. It's not just codes of conduct. It's codes of conduct. But it's a way by which we can gauge our progress. It's markings on the roadside, that we're heading in the right direction. It's things that we can aspire for and know this is the kind of, from scriptural authority, from Bhagavatam authority, from Amala Purana authority, these are the characteristics that I should aspire for and develop further as I go along in my spiritual life. That's this other track of the train. And just by hearing, along with chanting Krishna's holy name, hearing these Bhagavatam messages, these characteristics become developed. So let's go back to the verse directly. Adhyatmika anushravanat. One should hear spiritual matters, spiritual topics. Actually, the Bhagavatam is encouraging this because that's what the Bhagavatam does. It provides us spiritual subject matters to hear and chant and remember. Shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadavaha. And the chanting of Krishna's holy name. Of course, this is Kapila. We can chant Kapila's holy name or any of the forms of the Lord's holy name. Then comes, just like in Harinam Chintamani, many of you studied that text for some time when it was being taught. There are primary names and there are secondary names. You're familiar with that message of Haridas Thakur. Primary names, the distinction is, primary names are names of Krishna in terms of his loving relationships in Vrindavan. Like that nice painting there of Yasoda Nandana or Nanda Nandana. Those are names, those are examples given in Harinam Chintamani. That song that we sing before class, those are primary names. And Krishna and his activities in Vrindavan, Krishna and his loving relationships with the residents of Vrindavan, those primary names, the person. And then the secondary names are the post. Ishvara, Paramatma, Esha. Those are indicating the qualities of the Supreme Lord, different characteristics of him. Ajita, different features of the Supreme Lord. And those secondary names, they can deliver one from the cycle of birth and death. They grant liberation. But beyond liberation, this stage of Krishna prema, love for Krishna in his realm of Vrindavan, is what the primary names can deliver. The potencies are such, even greater. And so, Nama Sankirtanach Chame, chanting of my holy names. This is just a little educational item. From my visits to China, I've learned a lot about Buddhism that I didn't know before. And there are many different varieties of Buddhism today. Just like, you know, how many varieties of Christianity are there today? Whew. Besides the main branches, now it's really popular. There's all kinds of other ones. I forget what they have a name for it. Non-denominational, something like that. In China today, the type or the brand that's most popular is called Pure Land Buddhism, without lots of detail. The manifestation of Buddha who propounded this Pure Land Buddhism called Amitabha Buddha. And part of the practice of the Amitabha Buddhists is they chant his name. And part of their sadhana is to aspire to attain that realm that Amitabha Buddha created for Buddhists. It's a Sukhavati is the name of the place. It's within this material realm. It's like a heavenly planet. where it's sukha, very blissful place materially, and where, you know, trouble free and, you know, hankering and lamenting is next to nil. So the point is, they, his followers, or whether he said it or they just do it, they chant his name. It's part of their, they have mala, and they chant his name, and they aspire to go to his place. Very similar. But it's not, that's not the same. That's not the Buddha who is the incarnation described in Canto 1, Chapter 3 of the Bhagavatam. It's another person who founded a religion or founded a branch of Buddhism. But it's the message I want to convey here is specifically calling the names of the Supreme Lord. And that's not the Supreme Lord. He's a living entity who became, at least, you know, historically, became elevated or enlightened or whatever. But that's not the Supreme Lord. That's not the name of the Supreme Lord. At best, it could fall in the category of Abbas, but it can't, it's not the same. Not the same. The direct names of the personality of Godhead, this is the Sirtanach Chame. Then, Arjavena, Arjava, Arjava, very important quality. Bhaktisiddhanta writes in Brahmanism and Vaishnavism, a nice essay on the comparison of what does it mean to be a Brahmana, what does it mean to be a Vaishnava. For a Vaishnava, this quality of Arjava or straightforwardness is the most outstanding one. Quality of a Brahmana, most outstanding one. Straightforward, you say, you know, part of the way to define what that means is what it's not. It's not, there's no duplicity. The example that Bhaktisiddhanta gives is from the Vedas, you're mostly familiar with this. Gautama Rishi was approached by a young boy who requested Gautama to accept him as a disciple. So, as was the practice at the time, Gautama requested him to let him know what is his gotra, what's the family in which he was born. So he said, "I don't know." He said, "Go ask your mother." And when he went to ask his mother, his mother said, "I don't know. I've been with so many different men, I don't know who your father is." But you can tell Gautama that my name is Jabala and your name is Satyakama. So you can just tell me, you're Satyakama Jabala. So Satyakama Jabala went back and told Gautama exactly everything that his mother had said. "My mother doesn't know who my father was." "Very well, I accept you." Because this is straightforwardness. This is the principal qualification of a Brahman. It's not by birth, but you have the quality that even you disclose something that may not look so good, may not look so favorable, you just abide by the truth. Very straightforward in your dealings. "I accept you as a disciple." You are a qualified person. The foremost qualification of Brahmana, which indicates one whose quality is in the realm of goodness very strongly, or at least can be trained like that, straightforwardness. There's another Sanskrit term, saralata, saralata, similar, straightforward, and simplicity in one's dealings. Not crooked, that's the opposite. Crooked or duplicitous. Say one thing, you mean another thing. or say one thing and do another thing. And say one thing to one person, say another thing to another person. It goes on all the time. All the time. In one sense, it's kind of human that you want to say something will be pleasing to the person and not displeasing to the person. So you say something that's not going to be displeasing to the person. And then you speak to another. You don't want to say something that's displeasing to the other, so you say what's pleasing to the other. That's nice. You don't want to be displeasing to others. But it's a higher principle to just be straightforward. Arjavina. Then Arya Sangena, we know from Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna what Aryan is, because he was surprised that Arjuna was speaking like a non-Aryan. And Krishna says, you know the progressive values of life. Someone who knows what the goal of life is, and they're acting according to what the goal of life is. That's an Aryan. And a non-Aryan doesn't know. And how many times Prabhupada would say they don't know the goal of life? I mean, don't even think about the goal of life other than get money. Get an education so you get money so you can have stuff and have a nice standard of living, etc. Provide for your family. That's what good people do, what conscientious people do. But it's not the goal of life. Anyway, it's rare to find people that know the goal of life. I've done this as an experiment, just ask, an audience I don't know, what would you say is the goal of life? And you get a lot of blank stares. Just a little anecdotal, but just, it's on the point of knowing the goal of life. One of Prabhupada's earliest disciples at 22nd Avenue was a devotee named Rupanuga. You can read about this in Leelamrita. At a certain point in 22nd Avenue, there was a gentleman of means that was coming to the program, and he liked so much what Prabhupada was doing. He said, I will finance a center in Buffalo if you will send somebody to run the center, because Prabhupada was in an expansive mood. So Prabhupada accepted his offer, and he selected Rupanuga to go to Buffalo and start a little center. And it was perfect tales, something like 35 devotees came from that one university program, and I'm one of them. And then later Rupanuga became our GBC and our Brooklyn temple. Different things happened. So I would regularly go with him because he really liked college programs, and he had his particular style of how he did. So he had somebody make bookings to go to classrooms, and then he would go to the classroom, give a class in the classroom. So the way he did the class was really amazing. He was really tall and naturally bald. Looked like Yul Brynner. That doesn't mean anything to you, like movie star kind of a person. And he would dress very formally, and he would come into the classroom, and all the students were wondering, who's this movie star person? And he'd go to the side of one end of the room, and he'd set up a little altar. He's not saying anything. He's just, doing like a ritual. And then he'd light a stick of incense and wave the incense, and he sat real straight, Bhaktisiddhanta straight, looking like a movie star with this altar that he just set up, and he hasn't said a word. And then the first thing he said, what's this guy going to say? His first words were, what is the highest truth you know? You know, it's kind of like what's the goal of life. But it was a little, confrontational. You know, shake him up a little bit, kind of a question. And that's how it began, whatever it is. Because what's the goal, or what's the highest truth? And look at it. Because, you know, classes, part of the reason is classes had to be, well, within the confines of the schedule, a certain 45 minutes, 50 minutes, or whatever it was. Just got right, you know, right into it. I don't know if that would work so well today. Just, you know, that was some number of years ago. But that was his approach. So, an Aryan is one who knows the goal of life. And a non-Aryan doesn't know the goal of life. And one that doesn't know the goal of life, the character they exhibit and the behaviors that they perform correspond with someone that doesn't know the goal of life. And the converse. So it's right at the front end of the list of qualities is Arya Sangena. Prabhupada quotes directly from his description in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Asat Sangha Tyag, a Vaishnavachara. The Lord Chaitanya was asked a question, how is one to know who is a Vaishnav? That same question was asked at different times, and he gave varied answers, but in this one case, a Vaishnava is one who avoids asat sangha, those who are attached to asat, association with materialistic people. Now, many of you are householders, and how are you supposed to follow that one? Quit your jobs or what? Because there's non-devotees all over the place, not only in the workplace. Bhaktivinoda Thakur being a holder, you know, how to follow the instructions of Rupa Goswami, because that's in Lord Chaitanya, because it's in Rupa Goswami's Nectar of Instruction. Same message. He explained that householders may be in their interactions, in their occupational work, conventionally cordial and polite. Oh, how are you today? Like, you know, cordial exchange. And that's not in violation of this. But specifically, the violation is confidential association, disclosing one's mind in confidence, hearing them disclose their, not engaging in, you know, my dear friend in the workplace, what do you think I should do about a situation in my home life? We don't do that. We're you know, polite. Not like just cosmetically polite. We're polite. We're respectful to all living entities. But the sangha that's being spoken of here is intimate association and, you know, hearing from such persons on, you know, their very colorful subject matters. You all know very well what subject matters come out in the workplace. So those kinds of association is not something that a Vaishnava Grahastha should do. But being cordial is something we should be courteous to everyone. So, anarya sangena. Then, nirahang kriyaya, without false ego. Ahankara and nirahankara, not acting with false ego. And Prabhupada is, because that's a challenge. Don't act in false ego. How are you supposed to do that? Because even before the living entities get bodies, we're under the influence of false ego. We're covered. And then you get a body, and then you act through your body, influenced by false ego. So we're not supposed to do that. And there's a very nice verse. There's many, but just was sharing this with another devotee, 2.1.10, where the chanting of the holy name, the doubtless and fearless path, is the chanting of the holy name. And in the purport, Prabhupada describes that it dissolves false ego. The potency is there. So there's moments when chanting the holy name that we're not so much influenced by false ego, but wait a while and it comes back again. So it's not just a temporary abeyance of false ego, but literally dissolving false ego. And that dissolving of false ego permits the ushering in of our true sense of self, not voidism or impersonalism, but the true sense of self has to do with our position in relation to Krishna. So a devotional service is to be engaged in this way without false ego. Just like the question last night about trying to do something and acting through false ego, acting as if one is the doer. We all know that paradigm so well. I'm going to do it. We've been trained up since we're little. We're still being encouraged to, you can do it. You're a smart young boy or girl and, you know, work very hard and you can do it. And act through false ego, kijai. We all know the paradigm. We live with that paradigm. And then the spiritual discipline is to become free from that. And along with that discipline, mentioned, nice, wonderful section, controlling the mind and senses and, you know, following regulations and, well, there's a certain austerity to all of those things. It sounds like a lot of no's and some yeses that are really high. However, you know, we have to apply ourselves to something. Supposing we don't apply ourselves to these things, then we're going to make some other endeavor in some other way. We'll make an endeavor through false ego to achieve something of this world, and we're going to endeavor some other way. It's just intrinsic to the soul is going to endeavor. That's what, of the five factors of action, that's the one that we do. We endeavor. So it's just endeavor in the right direction. And one's capacity may be very tiny. It's okay with that tiny capacity endeavor, and it starts to grow. Krishna helps, just like a seed, and you put water on the seed, and the seed starts to expand. And then it has a life. It's not, you know, because the covering of the seed gets softened. Not only that allows it to expand, but then the life inside starts to grow. Because there's a soul inside, life starts to grow. And this covering of the seed just eventually falls off. And then the little plant or whatever was inside grows and grows and grows. And for us, that hearing and chanting is, whatever our little capacity is, that's okay. Go on with hearing and chanting. It's like watering the seed. It'll grow. Not too much. Not too little. Regulated and hearing and spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness, develops very naturally. Last thing Prabhupada speaks here, I mean, there's so many things. We could spend a lot of time on this purport. He speaks of self-interest. I'll read again what he says. Arjavena means without diplomacy. A devotee should not make plans out of self-interest. Of course, preachers sometimes have to make some plan to execute the mission of the Lord under proper guidance. But regarding self-interest, a devotee should always be without diplomacy. And he should avoid the company of persons who are not advancing in spiritual life. So self-interest. Well, the material condition of life is self-interest. I mean, it's the wrong idea of self. Real self-interest is to see to Krishna's interest. That's our real self-interest. But when Krishna is eclipsed, then we don't see Krishna's interest, we see self-interest. And even so, then we just kind of fudge it, or, you know, put the two together. We make a plan for Krishna consciousness that's seeing my self-interest. It's just natural because that's the way we're conditioned. But it's like that nourishing process of watering the seed, that self-interest tendency is meant to be diminished and dissolved. In favor of what? In favor of Krishna's interest. That's bhakti, pleasing Krishna. And when we please Krishna's interest, that's our real self-interest. We're not leaving ourselves, you know, out of what's really beneficial for us, but it's what's really beneficial for us. And then the other things that we need that are in the category otherwise of self-interest, Krishna provides. It's the nature of love as opposed to the nature of competition and selfishness. The nature of love, just like loving parents. They're very happy to take care of the needs of their children. That's why they have children. Loving parents, they want that loving exchange. And so the child doesn't have to feel I have to make some separate arrangement for myself because mom and dad are out to lunch. They're not present. They're not thinking of my needs, so I gotta go make some arrangement for my needs. But bhakti is different. Bhakti is like being in the care of our loving father and mother, both, Radha and Krishna. They'll take care of our needs. We don't have to think about that. I mean, we may do some practical this and that things, but it's not like the doership. I'm going to take care of my things and then I'll go pay some attention to Krishna over there. And then on my thing over there. So that secular spirit is not Krishna consciousness. It's not what Christianity is either. It's not what bhakti is. No self-interest. Not of the material kind. And so Krishna's interest is a real self-interest. So as that grows, as the bhakti principle grows, then that selfishness, I'm at the center consciousness, dissipates. It's a sign of making progress. And focus simply goes to Krishna's interest. We can't artificially just jump there, but that's a direction to move in, to aspire for it, on the strength of devotion that's properly nourished by hearing and chanting. Okay, so I'll stop there and see if there's any questions or comments.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. There's many questions that come from this nice verse and purport that you choose. One thing that it came to mind as I'm hearing is that these are qualities that when I see sort of as an individual who have to cultivate and try to, you know, bring these qualities in the forefront of my life. I'd like to say it's a big list, and you know, it's not an easy thing.
Yes, yeah, not an easy thing.
However, when we see it in the context of a community, or a spiritual community, it's almost it's common sense. It's without them, it doesn't fit. You're not able to actually have a community without these qualities being present. So, as an individual, maybe I can say, well, you know, I'm in the process of trying to get there, and, you know, I'm working hard and blah, blah, like that. But as a community, it's a necessary thing that it doesn't, if it's not in place, then it seems that is, you know, you won't be able to get there, to get, you know, to a proper functioning, healthy spiritual community. So, if you can comment on this, you know.
Well, two things immediately. One is, community is a collection of individuals. So while the way that you presented your question was just describing the paradigm of it's not easy to develop these qualities, but on the other hand, without these qualities, how can we have community? So my response is that community is a collection of individuals. So the collection of individuals starts with the individual taking individual responsibility for developing these qualities. And then how do you develop these qualities? Well, bhakti, and then having proper guidance. So systems or relationships that permit proper guidance. So to have proper guidance, you have to have proper guiders. You have to have Brahmins and example-setting personalities. So that's the first order of business. I mean, besides the individual commitment being properly guided. Or as Prabhupada said, that his mission was to create a class of first-class men. Brahmanas, Brahmana Vaishnavas. So the opportunity is there, the tools are there, even just hearing the text of Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of sincere devotees, devotees that wish to advance spiritually. And that's how these qualities can come about, discussed already. Second is really another recommendation of class on recorded in Chicago on Tuesday by Shivaram Maharaj was speaking on Varnashram, and at least 50% of the discussion on Varnashram was about qualities. And with scriptural reference, there's verses where there's 30 qualities. Krishna speaking to Uddhava, if I remember correctly. These 30 qualities are essential for a human being. And so, you know, identifying those qualities, how prominently they are manifest in our lives helps to indicate one's varna and ashram. I called him after the class and said, wow, can we make an arrangement for you to teach this in detail? So we made it a tentative plan. Labor Day weekend next year in Giranagari. And doesn't have a whole thing on Varnashram, but he said the seminars that he's done in Hungary, it takes 8 hours. And one of the sections is having people identify, having them identify their varna and ashram. I said, wow, you know, that's a hot topic. He said, yeah, I know it's a hot topic. But it was very easy, and people felt very comfortable, even as a hot topic. So I'm really looking forward. But so the principle that he spoke of in the recorded class was, of these 30 qualities, one sees which ones are prominent within oneself, and then that helps one identify one's varna or ashram. Anyway. And then let me accept the position that suits it for my varna and ashram. Then, you know, meanwhile, cultivating the transcendental feature while honoring, you know, my psychophysical nature. And it's not so dissimilar, just the model is different, but not so dissimilar from the acceptance and progress theme that we already dealt with in Gita Nagari this last, you know, Memorial Weekend. Acceptance and progress. Is that our theme? This one or the previous one? Acceptance and progress. So how do we acknowledge? So then I have my role within the community, and I'm not going to pretend I'm way up here when I'm not way up here. And then other members can understand our own position, and we can understand our own position, and we can work together with a community, as a community, recognizing not everyone has the fullness of all qualities, and that's okay. We're working together to develop our Krishna consciousness. And each of us has a role to play within the community according to our nature. The present makeup of our psychophysical nature. And then we encourage, respect and encourage everyone according to their position. Without projecting false expectations on others and judging others and all of those unpleasant things.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you mentioned that the secondary names of Krishna have the potency of getting one up to the point of liberation. Just a clarification question, Maharaj. How can I understand that in relationship to, like, you know, the goal of Mayavad philosophy, which is also to get to...
How can you understand that to be the goal of your life?
How can I understand that in relation to the Mayavad philosophy? Or are we talking about two different kinds of liberation when we're talking about the liberation that can be achieved by the secondary names of Krishna versus...
I got about 80% of what you said, but since the key parts to your question I missed. Could you do it again slowly and clearly? I'm sorry. Just the last, you know.
I'm sorry, Maharaj. The goal, you mentioned that the secondary names of Krishna have the potency.
They can give liberation. Primary names can establish one's personal relationship with Krishna.
With Krishna. So the secondary names, are we talking about a different liberation with the
different relation?
Different liberation. The names of Krishna as opposed to the liberation we're talking about when we talk about, you know, the goal of Mayavad philosophy is also.
No, I mean, if I've understood your question correctly, no. No. There are four kinds of Vaishnava liberation. And then there's the impersonal liberation. Sayuja is the impersonal liberation, merging. Then there's Salokya, residing on the same planet as the Supreme Lord. Samipya, Sharsti, Sarupya, having a form like the Lord, having opulences like the Lord. So Those are Vaishnava liberations, as distinct from the impersonal kind of liberation. Braja, prema, is, say, fifth dimension, sixth dimension. It's not just liberation. It's a very intimate, loving exchange with the original feature of Krishna in his Goloka realm. Primary names can give that. So the secondary names can give not that. So, yeah, in one sense, yes, it's a distinction between the four Vaishnava liberations and Braja Prem, not the four Vaishnava liberations and Sayuja. That's not the distinction that's being made. Is it clear, or should I say it again? I'll say it again. I can see the question mark on your forehead. There's not just two options, there's three. There's, aside from material existence, there's merging, Sayuja. Then another is four kinds of Vaishnava liberations, which carry one to Vaikuntha. Awe and kind of, now I'm liberated, notion or experience or condition. Then there's a third, which primary names grant, distinct from what the secondary names grant. The primary names grant Nanda Nandana, Yasoda Nandana, Giribhada Dhari. You know, that these Krishna in his Vraja realm. They're stimulations for that kind of ecstatic love that can carry one into Krishna's holy realm in Goloka Vrindavan. So it's the primary names take one to that condition, as opposed to the secondary names which can take one into the Vaikuntha realm. And then distinct altogether is this third, which is the classic merging with the Supreme, becoming one with the Supreme. So no, it's not the distinction between Vaikuntha versus merging. It's the distinction between Vaikuntha versus Goloka. Clear? The question mark is gone. Good.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. There's one question that I didn't have clarity for a while, and you did bring up in the context of Varnashram. And earlier in the class, we were also discussing the aspect of truthfulness.
Aspect of truthfulness.
Truthfulness. Okay. And, saying one place, one thing, one place. And
straightforward.
Yes, straightforwardness. So I was thinking, when we put Varnashram into context and the principles of Bhagavatam, so some of the principles are very Brahmanical, which are, yes, very natural to Brahmanas.
Yes. Yes.
But when you put it in the context of a Kshatriya, they become more foreign qualities. So what I'm trying to understand is, Rani, if a person is more Kshatriya or Shudra or Vaishya, is the idea to elevate himself to the platform of a Brahmana? Or
is he able to do what? Elevate himself?
Elevate himself,
yes,
to Brahmana.
Yes. But doing so is, in part, it rests upon spiritual strength, and it also rests upon sankalpa or intention. I'll give a practical example of this. Prabhupada spoke, it may also be in his writing, that the position of a Vaishya. A Vaishya may say, he gives this example, I've heard it. Buy this product, your head is bald, rub it on your head and your hair will grow. And a Vaishya speaks things like that. It doesn't make your hair grow, but they sell the product that they say makes your hair grow. Or another example, sir, for you I make no profit. And a Vaishya may say like that. But everybody knows he has to make some profit. Now, he may have a friend that he doesn't do that with, and, I'll give you at cost. But when in common vernacular, when a Vaishya says, for you I make no profit, it's not true. But Vaishyas do those things. And it's part of entrepreneurship that they will do those things. That's not, it indicates varna that's not what a Brahmin will do. A Brahmin won't do that. But a Vaishya will do that. It's part of their, so, you know, just taking that paradigm of here's the third equalities. Now, a Vaishya is one that they're completely comfortable doing that. And a Brahmin is not comfortable. One can be a Vaishya Vaishnav. But by being a Vaishnav, so now comes your question, by being a Vaishnav, and by being a Vaishnav, in course of time, that Vaishya will feel uncomfortable, whereas before they were comfortable saying those things. So their qualities being elevated on the strength of being a Vaishnav, and they don't want to do that anymore. Like a classic example is Magari, who, you know, there's the before and after. Before, his happiness was seeing the animals writhe in pain. And afterwards, he was unwilling to even harm an ant.
So if I understand correctly, then one has to, through the practice of sadhana or cultivation of spiritual qualities, one has to elevate himself to a position of a brahmana to achieve the goal of life.
Yes and no. But let's take some examples from scripture. Kolavachar Sridhar, does that name mean anything to you? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associate? He was a Vaishya. But he was a Vaishnav. And his maintenance was selling things. That way he was a Vaishya. He would gather banana leaves, banana flowers, and bananas. You know, in Navadvipa at the time, so many trees, just climb up the tree and get the leaves, get the flowers, get the bananas. And so he couldn't get much of a price for them, but he would sit by the roadside and sell them. And he earned next to nothing each day and then half of that he would use for worship of the Ganges. The other half was his maintenance, which was next to nothing. So he didn't become a Brahmana, he remained a Vaishya. But he was pure devotee, loved by Lord Chaitanya. He didn't stop being a Vaishya. Didn't become a Brahmana. Better than a Brahmana. Far better.
I think it'll need some more meditation for me.
Yeah, it's delicate. It's subtle. I think that's a better word. It's very subtle. So to subtle things, one needs pure consciousness to see the distinction between this and that which is subtle. In one sense, although his occupation was that of a Vaishya, he was completely truthful. He didn't lie. He would bargain. But then Lord Chaitanya would also, although he was a Brahmana, he would bargain with Kolavachar Sridhar and then go to the marketplace. In that same section it was describing, he would go to the person selling milk and ask, you know, please give me a good price. And then, I'm a Brahmin, you can just give it as charity. Bargaining. Now, you know, Brahmanas don't ask for charity, they receive charity. Anyway, it's...
Yes, Maharaj. Thank
you. Maharaj, I didn't hear the whole discussion, but I heard some part of it. Maybe you already said it, but I heard the class on Varnashrama by Maharaj, Shivaram Swami Maharaj.
It's revolutionary.
Yeah. And he mentioned something towards the end, that since we don't have such an established system, it requires training. And even when, there is no guarantee that that trained person can particularly execute that particular function.
Yes.
So doesn't that mean that unless one has that inherent quality, you know, even after training, you can, no?
No, but qualities can come from Krishna. I know, just so many things. Each one of us, I could say myself personally, no, qualities. But service, and then you do the service because it's needed. And to some degree or another, some qualities come to do the service because there's the horse and then there's the cart. It's like what, just as a for example, what he's doing, it's pioneering. It's a big mystery how to establish for an ashram, because Prabhupada said he wanted it and here's the reasons why and all of that. How do you do that? You know, where's the qualification to do that? For example, and so many things we do. So many things we do. Now it's becoming more that not just ask people to do some service, but give some training so they can do some service. Novel. And then your question, well, even with training, is there a guarantee? There is no guarantee that they'll, even with training, they'll be qualified or equipped to do that service. But the more of a chance. But supposing that that person that's being trained, it's not so much their characteristic to do that. Well, if they're conscientious, Krishna will give them the ability to do that. Something that I heard Prabhupada had said, the early group of devotees, that he wanted artists. So he, you know, sent a message out. I would like people that have some artistic experience to be engaged in artwork. But some persons hadn't had any. They never held a paintbrush. And they were engaged in painting. Paintings. So they asked, one of them told me, they asked Prabhupada, should I take some art lessons? He said, no. And his answer was, Lord Brahma has designed this body in such a way that you practice it something with devotion and the ability will come. So just practice with devotion, the ability will come. So that's even without training or without qualification. Just the principal thing, the horse, a desire to serve the spiritual master. And that particular devotee came, you know, one of the super excellent artists. Now some other persons I know, they had some art training. Some didn't. Some just wanted to serve. Huh? Yes. Last question, we're going to end.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I wish you are trying to understand more deeply about self-interest.
Mm.
That why we tend to go towards self-interest. I'm thinking about the example you gave about the child. If child feels safe in a relationship with the parents, he doesn't go beyond the boundaries and he's very happy in the shelter. So is that why we don't feel deeper way, that sense of security, or like he's, Krishna is there for us, that's why we go towards the self-interest?
Well, it's not just feeling, is Krishna going to be there for us? There's the 180 degree opposite vector that's taken us away from Krishna to begin with. What's that one? I want to enjoy. That one. and, you know, parentheses, without Krishna. Close parentheses. Exclamation point. It's that tendency. It's not just, will Krishna be there for me? It's a spirit of independence. False. And then that false spirit of independence is awarded with maya, the sense that we can do it. We can enjoy independently from Krishna. Now that's this, you know, wrong kind or wrong notion about self-interest. It's not self-interest. It's self-destruct. It's self-misery. But the tendency is very strong. So it's both. If the child feels safe, then they don't need to stray here and there. And if they don't have that sense of feeling safety, tendency will be, with children, there's this, you know, natural kind of innocence and a natural kind of curiosity because they want to learn and explore and go here and go there, even, you know, don't go there. That's the signal to go there. I had this really wonderful experience where a very loving mother and her, you know, young, mischievous son were, the son was sitting right next to a power strip where the projector was plugged in, the computer was plugged in, and the sound system was plugged in. And the little boy was curious. So I was seated here, the little boy was right over there, and the mother was right there. So I just, when I saw him doing this, I looked. I thought, uh-oh. And she didn't say anything. She just went like this. And he went like this. I said, wow. Okay, we'll end there. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki.